7 o'clock on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. It is 7 o'clock. That means we are in hour two of the program. Hour one, the podcast, now available for download. I'm going to have to download it to get caught up on what happened this morning. I wasn't here.
I only got here halfway through.
I would assume. I didn't even listen to it on the way in. I listened to music. I wanted to soothe the nerves, and the jangled nerves.
You stopped for a coffee, though.
I did, and a tea. It's all part of the routine, laddie. It's all part of the routine.
Stop for like a car wash.
I shouldn't have stopped for that haircut.
Had a chat with a neighbor.
Hour one of the show is in the books. Download the podcast now, Apple, Google, Spotify. Hour two underway. This hour of Halford and Bruff is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. A very astute texter pointed out that while I mentioned that the start times were staggered tonight, the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs, I didn't mention the times. It all begins at 4 o'clock tonight with the Bruins and the Canes. Then 4:30 is Leafs Bolts. 6:30, Blues Wild, and then 7 o'clock. Kings Oilers. But 4 o'clock tonight, our time, the first game tonight, a very pivotal game five between the Bruins and the Canes. Joining us now from Boston Hockey Now, a good friend of the program, Vancouver's favorite son, Joe Haggerty, on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Hags?
What's going on, boys? There's nothing better for a severe case of jangled nerves than a big cup of coffee. That's what I say. Yeah,
it settled me right down. I am shaking uncontrollably. So I want to start with all the great hockey cliches that we get at this time of the year. After that game four victory, we heard about the Bruins' pride and the Boston character and your biggest players and your best stars having to be your biggest players and best stars in the big moments. But cliches exist for a reason, Hags, and that's because of what the perfection line did over those two games, games three and games four, to get Boston right back in this series.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, at the beginning of all those cliches that you talked about is the adjustment that Bruce Cassidy made and the Bruins made, putting the perfection line together. They had not played together in months. They did not play together for pretty much the entire first two games. They started to come together at the end of game two when it was clear the Bruins are going to go down 0-2 in Carolina and go back to Boston 0-2. And that's when Bruce Cassidy went into the blender, mixed things up, and went to the old faithful. Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, and David Pastrnak, and lo and behold, you know, all three of those guys really exploded offensively. The Bruins finally were able to get a foothold offensively against the Carolina defense, a penalty kill that had really swarmed them and suffocated them in the first couple of games. And they were able to play with leads in those two games in Boston, which was hugely important as well. I think that's a big part of why they were able to win those games and play a little more comfortably. I think Carolina plays a little different when they're trailing in a game. Not quite the same aggression and speed attack levels where they're just swarming you like they do when they're in the lead or it's a 0-0 game. So it was interesting to see things turn. I think for the Bruins, they just needed the confidence that they could beat this team after they'd lost them the first five games that they played them this year. And I got outscored like 26-4. So huge confidence booster for them to win the two games in Boston, go back to Carolina tied 2-2. But it'll be interesting to see what kind of Carolina team comes out for game five, because I did not think they played well in game four at all and really seemed to lose their composure as the game was going on.
Yeah, they played a dumb game, and they had an opportunity really to take a stranglehold in that series, especially with the Bruins missing Charlie McAvoy and Hampus Lindholm on the back end. Is that their two best defensemen right there? McAvoy certainly is. I don't know how Hampus Lindholm has played since being traded to the Bruins, but it is two pretty good defensemen. What is their health status going forward?
Yeah, I would say that's definitely their top two defensemen. Those are going to be the 2 minutes workhorse guys. They're going to play in all situations if they're healthy. They're going to be the go-tos. Charlie McAvoy, theoretically, he could play tonight, I suppose, if miraculously he passed two COVID tests. I don't suspect that's going to happen. He did not travel with the team yesterday. I don't think he's going to play tonight. I think it's extremely doubtful, just not going to happen. He would have to have a back-to-back negative COVID test after testing positive. So I would suspect that he's out. As far as Hampus Lindholm goes, he practiced yesterday with the team. It was the first time he'd practiced since getting hit by Andrei Svechnikov in game 2, getting trucked by him. He was not wearing like a no contact sweater or anything like that. It was a, you know, optional practice, but he was practicing without limitations. He was not ruled out for tonight's game, but he's going to have to get cleared medically before he's going to play. So it's potentially he could play tonight. It's a possibility, but I wouldn't count on either one of them if I were the Bruins at this point. But, you know, Lindholm may come back, but who knows? Is he going to be gun shy after getting absolutely smoked behind the net and set up with a buddy pass from Brandon Carlo? That remains to be seen as well. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
Hags, how much fun is Brad Marchand having at Tony DeAngelo's expense?
Well, this is exactly the kind of matchup that Marchand's looking for, right? He's found a playmate in the series, somebody he can go after and get under his skin and just absolutely drive nuts. And, you know, we all know Tony DeAngelo. There is plenty of material there for Brad Marchand to work with. So I think just the facts, DeAngelo made the classic mistake, right? He's a hothead. He's an idiot. He clearly is a knucklehead. And, you know, he managed to be kind of on the straight and narrow this year with Carolina on his best behavior because he almost, like, shot his way out of the league with his mouth. You know, he's starting to show the old Tony DeAngelo here, and he's clearly showing that Marchand got under his skin and is bothering him. And he completely lost it down the stretch in that game, whether it was the stupid penalty he took, cross-checking, and then, you know, trying to punch Connor Clifton. He should have gotten penalized more for that, whether it was throwing a stick at the end of the game, you know, like a 10-year-old to try to knock
that was
away
bush
when Brad Marchand was going to score the empty netter. Like, he looked completely out of his head, just crazed. And, like, he completely lost his composure. And Marchand knows that he can bother him that much and he can get to him that much. Not only is he a liability for Carolina, but I think that's going to get Marchand even more engaged and to go after him being on, you know, the right side of that fence of instigating somebody and of agitating somebody right now.
Hey, Hags, how is Taylor Hall playing?
I thought he was good in the first couple of games. I thought he was honestly Boston's best forward in the first couple of games. I think the last couple, not as much. And really with him, part of the issue is when he's away from Pastrnak, he doesn't play the same. You know, he doesn't play with the same energy level. He doesn't play with the same sort of confidence level. You know, he's just a different guy when he doesn't have 88 on the other wing with him that he can bounce off of, create off of, and kind of make plays off the rush with. I think he's been okay in the last couple, but certainly not as good as he was in the first two. And that's to be expected, right? This is, if the Bruins are going to go with the perfection line, as they have in the last couple of games, they better score and score a lot because it's going to turn into the old Bruins of the last few years where you can count on the top line to provide a lot of offense, but you're not going to get a ton of secondary scoring. And I think we started to see that pattern develop in the last two games. And it'll be interesting to see at what point Bruce Cassidy goes back to the way it was before, which was working for months and months and was getting scoring up and down the lineup for the Bruins forward group, you know, if things start to dry up a little bit.
Hags, what are the odds we're seeing the last of Patrice Bergeron as a Boston Bruin or in the NHL in these playoffs?
You know, Halford and Bruff, I wish I had the answer to that question. I wonder just as much as you guys do, especially when, you know, the little things, right? Obviously, he's keeping it close to the vest, and he's saying he's going to make the decision after the season is over. And at his age, I suspect that that's what he's going to do from year to year anyway, regardless if he keeps playing or not. But when you start seeing him bringing his kids to the All-Star game when he took part in that, his kids were with him at the podium the other night after the game. You know, you can see his kids are getting a little older now, and just knowing him personally, I think he wants to be involved in doing stuff with them and coaching his son Zach's hockey, his son's 6 now and just starting to play. And I think he really wants to be involved in that, and he's not right now. And, you know, he's played 18 years in the league. He's played a lot of games and logged a lot of heavy miles. So, you know, I think he is going to take a lot of time when the year is over and decide whether he wants to keep going or whether he wants to just enjoy his family and job well done after almost 20 years in the NHL. And, you know, the other part of it is, I think incidents like the other night where he got the high stick around the eye are also reminders to him that maybe he wants to get out while the getting is good after 18 great years before, like, you know, he gets seriously hurt. And I think that's, I'm sure, a conversation he's having with his family, too, at 36 years old. So it would be a shame if he retires just because he's still at the top of his game, clearly, or close to it. Obviously, he's not as fast as he once was, but at 36, he's still one of Boston's best players, probably going to win the Selke this year. And the best two-way center in the league. But I think he's got more going on than just hockey right now, and that's what he's weighing. And, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, it's really difficult to say what's going on in somebody's head. So it may be the last time, the last run he has with the Bruins. And if it is, great career. I covered him from beginning to end. He was a joy to cover, a fantastic hockey player. And it's also going to put the Bruins in dire, dire straits in the center position because they do not have somebody that would be able to step in and fill his skates.
We're speaking to Joe Haggerty from Boston Hockey Now here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Okay, Hags, we've been at this for about 11 minutes already. I think this is very telling of the narrative overall. We barely mentioned Jeremy Swayman. Barely. I think we just mentioned that there was a goalie change. We didn't even mention that they did it.
There was a goalie playing for Boston.
And it's funny because I don't even think that's the wrong approach to take because Swayman's been good. He's got a .925 save percentage. He's only allowed 4 goals in the 2 games. But it almost feels like it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it feels like people were more enamored with Cassidy actually just making the change and changing up the energy than a significant difference between how Ullmark was playing and how Swayman has played.
Yeah, I mean, I think Swayman has played a little better than Ullmark, but you're right. I don't think it was about, like, saying Ullmark was horrible, get him out after game 2. I think it was more about, you know, you got to change the mojo in this series and try to switch the momentum and change the energy. And part of that was putting Swayman, and part of that was putting in Chris Wagner on the fourth line. Another great story. A guy that was relegated to the AHL all season long, was brought up for the last game of the regular season this year when they sat a bunch of players, and is now on the fourth line and is playing after playing for the Providence Bruins all season. So there was several changes they made, and going with the perfection line, putting them back together. Several changes they made, the coaching staff, in game 3 to really change what was going on in the series because they just did not like what they saw in the first 2 games. And Swayman was a part of that, and he's been extremely good. You know, he's made the saves when he's had to make them. I think he hasn't let up a bad goal yet, and that's exactly what they needed against the Carolina Hurricanes and kind of, you know, stop the bleeding at times when there was maybe 1 or 2 that Ullmark gave up that were kind of funky. And the other thing I think when you look at Swayman, and just this is my feeling having watched him play and my sort of assessment, is that I think of the two, he's the guy that potentially could steal your playoff games, and he's the guy that could potentially get really hot more than Ullmark. He struggled down the stretch in the month of April. Ullmark played him, and that's why Linus was the starting goalie for games 1 and 2. But I think in order for you to potentially maybe upset a team that's better than you in the series or go on a run in the playoffs, I think Swayman's going to be the guy that's going to be a prominent figure in that whole thing for the Boston Bruins. So, you know, in that sense, it was the right call, and it'll be interesting to see if he can handle the workload moving forward, because I don't think he's played more than 3 games in a row this entire season or in his NHL career. So, you know, you wonder if fatigue is going to get to a point. And this is kind of what they talked about going back with and forth with the 2 goalies during the playoffs, because they're not sure either one of them can kind of handle that night-in, night-out workload in the playoff grind.
Hey, Hags, I want to get back to the Patrice Bergeron situation. If Bergeron decides to retire, let's say if. The Bruins are going to be looking at their team and going, we've still got some really good players and some really good young players too, and Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy. Brad Marchand is still playing at a high level. We've locked up Taylor Hall for a while. I don't think this is a team that's going to be like, all right, well, tear it down. What might they do to address the fact that they wouldn't have Bergeron, they don't have David Krejci anymore? Down the middle, there would be big issues, but they would be able to maybe – use Bergeron's cap space to try and go out and find a top 6 centerman. Have you, I'm sure you've thought about it. It's probably a bit of a weird situation because you don't know if Patrice Bergeron is going to retire, but what do you think the plan would be in Boston?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. You know, they would have been big players for a guy like Tomas Hertl, if he had made it, you know, to free agency and hadn't re-signed with San Jose. So that, I think that's the kind of situation they're looking for, is a younger center, a guy that can become their, you know, one of their top 6 guys for a long time. So they don't have to worry about, you know, filling it again in a couple of years and you know, attracting that kind of a player into the fold, because, you know, organizationally and depth wise, prospect wise, they have Jack Studnicka, who, you know, has not been able to make the jump to the NHL. They still think highly of him and like him. Maybe he's a third line center in the NHL, though. Not sure if he's going to be enough offensively to be a top six guy. But, you know, the whole point is they're going to have to go outside the organization and find somebody like that, a really good player, as you said, use that cap space or, you know, trade away an asset or two. And I think there's going to be some players that they're going to be potentially looking at moving in this offseason in order to make something like that happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. The only sort of X factor here, I think, from the Bruins perspective, and you guys would know this player, even though he wasn't really playing center, I don't think, in Vancouver. But it'll be interesting to see how Fabian Lysell factors into things once they get him into the pro ranks, because I don't think he's going to spend a long time in the AHL before he's up, you know, with the NHL team and creating offense and making plays. And, you know, maybe they try a guy like that at center, too, if they have this dearth of, you know, top six dynamic players at the center position. It's going to be interesting to see how it works. But I think at the end of the day, they're going to find somebody around the league, and they're going to have to pay dearly probably for him to fill those skates when Bergeron is gone.
We're speaking to Joe Haggerty from Boston Hockey Now here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Hags, before we let you go, I do need to know, we talked about the injuries on defense and who's missing. Then I started looking at the minute dispersal for who's there. If McAvoy is out, at least for next game, maybe even longer, who knows how that's going to go. And if Lindholm doesn't return to the series, can the Bruins win this series with a six-man defensive group comprised of Mike Riley, Brandon Carlo, Derek Forbort, Josh Brown, Matt Grizzlick, and Connor Clifton?
They're not going to win if that's their sixth defense.
That's what it was on Sunday. I was looking at it. I'm like, I can't believe this. I didn't even know.
Connor Clifton led them in ice time with Connor, like 20 minutes. Minutes.
Connor Clifton was the high TOI guy.
Ridiculous.
Like, Connor Clifton was?
Yeah, he had 20 minutes.
They pulled it out of the bag because the perfection line stepped up and scored and played great. They can't sustain that for the rest of the series where they have a D like that. And like I said before, Carolina absolutely blew their entire foot off like during that game. They played a horrible, stupid, like just completely ill-advised game. They looked like they were playing with house money and they didn't care if they won that game or not. You know, they're going back to Carolina, which is astounding to me that they didn't take that game a little more seriously. But I just think it's going to be a different team in Carolina. And I think that defense will get exposed. If they don't come back, they're not winning the series. Even if they do come back, I still think Carolina is the better team. I think they probably win tonight, go up 3-1. And maybe they smell blood at that point and take care of it. But I do think they need one and probably both of those players back if they're going to pull this series out and beat a team that I think is better than them, younger than them, faster than them, and should by all rights win this series, even though it's tied 2-2 right now.
Hags, you're the best, man. I don't throw that term around lightly either. Thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight and the rest of the series. We'll do this again whenever the Bruins enter what's going to be a pretty interesting offseason.
All right, right back at you, boys. I'm going to go out and enjoy some Carolina sun now. See you guys.
See you, buddy.
Have fun, Hags.
Joe Haggerty from Boston Hockey Now here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I did not realize the situation was as dire on defense until I looked at who played against the Canes last game.
Connor Clifton.
Connor Clifton had 20 minutes and 16 seconds.
That's a great rich guy's name.
It is, actually.
Connor Clifton.
I'm sure he's doing well financially.
Have you been out on Connor Clifton's boat? Beautiful, beautiful boat. And yes, to the many, many texters that texted into the Dunbar Lumber text line, I was hinting, and maybe the Boston Bruins could be interested in a player like JT Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Vancouver sports media does. We take a situation and we try to turn it and apply it to ourselves. And we try to get
it to our will.
And we try to get players traded out of town.
That's all we want.
I just think it's curious what, if Bergeron does retire, I don't think there's any way that you can sit there and go, all right, well, that's it. We're going to tear it down. But you also can't look at your team and go, we're a Stanley Cup contender if Patrice Bergeron retires. You have to make a significant move. You have to do something there. So who's going to be like, losing Krejci was an underrated and maybe underreported league-wide story. Krejci was such an important part of that team. He was their leading scorer in 2011 when they won the Stanley Cup, and he was the leading scorer when they went to the Stanley Cup final against the Chicago Blackhawks a few years later. He's a really good player. Mm-hmm. Not a Hall of Famer, but he's a really good player. Who do they have in there right now as their 2C? Eric Halla? I like Eric Holla, but not as a 2C. And there's a reason why they really need to get some secondary scoring out of that line with Taylor Hall on it, because the perfection line can't do it all. Like, you don't see many one-line teams.
That's why they split it up.
Win the Stanley Cup. And that's exactly why they split it up. So if you're the Boston Bruins and if Patrice Bergeron walks away, and we've had so many people hint at it, and Hags had sort of like, he's like, yeah, he's bringing his kids around a lot, and not in like a negative sneering way, like I just made, you know, kids everywhere. Patrice Bergeron's kids are here again. There is reason to wonder if this might be Patrice Bergeron's last season. Then what do you do? Like, you have to go out and get a player that can match.
Fill the gap.
You can't just be like, well, we'll draft a guy and in 3 or 4 years he'll be with us. Yeah, but then where's Marchand's game? And you know, then you're wasting years of Pasternak's prime and Charlie McAvoy's prime, who you've just locked up to a massive extension.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that you're aware of this, but they've been doing this for the last little while, filling the gaps of guys that have left, right? Charlie Coyle came aboard. Taylor Hall came aboard. Nick Foligno came aboard. They all played pretty prominent roles. And these are guys that they got in the middle or later stages of their career, in the case of Foligno. On the blue line, I mean, look what they did this year. Is they knew that they needed someone, not necessarily just as a rental, but they also needed, and that's the key thing, is Coyle was a rental, and they converted that into a core guy. Hall was a rental. They converted him into a core guy. And Lindholm's the same way. Like, Lindholm's going to be a very, very key piece to the Bruins for the next 7 years.
And Hags was talking about Thomas Hertl. I'm sure they were discussing that at the very least.
Oh, yeah. I'd read articles from Hags dating way back to the beginning of the season that was going to be an inevitable target if Patrice Bergeron wouldn't come back. So if you're asking what the plan is, I would suggest that history is going to say that that's the plan. Is we don't rebuild, we reload, because we've got,
yeah,
Pasternak,
got all these guys,
Marchand, McAvoy, Lindholm now, I would say. And you've got good depth forwards. The real issue is, and I allude to what I said in the opening segment, the real issue is that you end up being Nashville. Nashville is, I think now, and I'm not overstating this, I think they're going to be a cautionary tale for a lot of teams about being in the mushy middle, where you make it to the playoffs and you're there and you have competitive regular seasons where you win between 40 and 45, maybe even close to 50 games, and you get around 100 points, but you're just not good enough to compete with the elite teams.
Right.
And that's weird.
Like, you might make the playoffs, you might squeak in, but you won't be all that competitive. And the Bruins without Bergeron could probably still squeak into the playoffs, like maybe, but they're not Stanley Cup contenders.
Right, and I think there's a few teams that are in that conversation, and that's a very weird place to be. Now, if you're the Bruins, you're going to say, okay, fair enough. However, I do think that this group, which is getting whittled away by the day, but they got us the Stanley Cup in 2011, it took us back to a Stanley Cup final in 2013, and then again in 2019, you can go with it. Nashville doesn't have any of those accolades to fall back on.
New West Pat texts in. Mm-hmm. And New West Pat knows Vancouver Sports Radio.
Does he?
New West Pat, I'm thinking of, I actually want to hire this guy now. He says OEL likes Boston. Him and Miller together in a trade package? Okay. We're having a little bit of fun here.
It's a lot of cap.
But it should be noted that we are hearing more and more chatter about the Canucks maybe trying to find a market for Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I don't know if they'll be successful. I don't know if there will be many takers out there for Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Remember that a lot of the reason that the Canucks made that trade with Arizona is for this season, mm-hmm, like this season to make the playoffs. It was a short-sighted move, and it didn't pay off. And now the Canucks are sitting there with a defenseman that played well. Like, he played like a $4 or $5 million defenseman. But unfortunately, he's got a lot of years left at a much higher cap hit than that. It's in the $7 million neighborhood. And he's getting older now. So we've probably seen the best of Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And the best of Oliver Ekman-Larsson is fine. But it's probably not going to get better. So it doesn't surprise me to hear that the Canucks are maybe seeing if there's a market for Oliver Ekman-Larsson, because we've heard they've tested the market on a lot of players. We heard that about Tyler Myers around the trade deadline.
Connor Garland.
We've heard this from the management group, they've said it themselves, not specific players, but they said, well, we're trying to shed some cap space. We're trying to create some more flexibility. So why wouldn't they explore Oliver Ekman-Larsson? And remember, when Ekman-Larsson was still in Arizona, there were two teams that he was willing to go to. Vancouver was one, and Boston was the other.
Look at Jason connecting dots. As we talk about the future of the Boston Bruins and the Vancouver Canucks, we should mention Stanley Cup futures. They've been updated now at playnow.com, obviously in light of the fact that Colorado, you know, took care of the Preds. Colorado is now a very clear, outright winner favorite for the Stanley Cup. All the decimal odds here, so 3.15 for the Abs. Interesting one. You brought this up a while ago, and it has come to fruition, Jason. In addition to betting on individual teams for futures as to who's going to win the Stanley Cup, you can also bet on the winning nation. Yes, that's right. You can bet on whether the USA or Canada, and that, of course, meaning the American teams or the Canadian teams, one of them will take home the Stanley Cup. U.S. a decided and obvious favorite here, 1.14, Canada at 4.75
to break the drought that goes all the way back to 1993.
And I think that these odds will take a pretty fundamental shift tonight, because if the Leafs lose and the Oilers lose, two Canadian teams are on the brink of elimination.
All three Canadian teams have their series tied at two.
Bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sportsbook. Coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, Stephen Brunt's going to join us, Sportsnet's very own. You hear him on the Fan 590. You read him on sportsnet.ca. 8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz from The Athletic Vancouver. We got a lot more to get into, so don't go anywhere. Halford, Brough, Sportsnet 650. On a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough for the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour two of the program. Joe Haggerty just joined us to preview tonight's Boston-Carolina game. Stephen Brunt from the Fan 590 in Toronto is going to join us in just a moment. That's hour two. Hour two is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. Finally, I need to tell you about the Vancouver Canadiens. The C's, they're back at the Nat. For tickets or info, visit CanadiansBaseball.com, and we will see you at the Nat. Do we have Stephen on the line now? Joining us via the tie line, Sportsnet.ca author. You hear him on Fan 590 in Toronto. Stephen Brunt here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Thanks. And thanks for taking the time to do this. It was interesting in hearing all the media between games four and five in this Leafs-Bolts series is the inevitable storyline got asked and rehashed to the players once again about the Leafs not having won a series in so long. And a couple of astute reporters pointed out that, you know, the majority of the guys on this team weren't around. Some of them were barely functioning as little children the last time the Leafs actually won. So maybe the ghosts of those failures don't hang over them. But I think it was interesting. Morgan Riley kind of addressed it and acknowledged it's hard to escape because the fan base and the media, you know, this is a storyline that's going to get played up until it's not a storyline anymore. And the players almost sort of have to inherit the ghosts of that, which I thought was an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, look, you can't ignore it, right? The history is there for everybody to see, and you know, you're right. It's not like any of these guys were around. Well, some of these guys were around for some of the past failures, but none of them were around for many of the past failures, which go back to the turn of the century, right? They go back before the salary cap, and the last time the Leafs were winning playoff series, you know, everybody knows they haven't won a Stanley Cup for a whole long time, but they were successful in the Pat Quinn years, and they were successful in the Pat Burns years, and they did win playoff series, and they got close. But this particular drought has, you know, just a different kind of feel to it, and I think last year was you know, it was obviously a strange season with the All-Canadian division and everything, but I think it was last year losing to the Canadians, who they finished, what, 28 points ahead of in the regular season and led 3-1. And it would look like a gimme, you know, in the first round. And there and if you can get through the Canadian division, which they dominated by and large last year, you get a free ticket to the semifinals and it's all on a plate. And when they lost that series, like most of these guys, almost all of these guys were there for that. So, yeah, it's not them, but it is kind of them. And it's the manner of the defeat. And it's a very different deal this year. They're in it against a team that may well be better than them. And they are the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions, right? They do know how to do this. And they've got the best defenseman in the world, probably, playing for them right now. So if they lose this series, they would lose it on merit, unlike last year. But you know, it's like it's logical that people would talk about it and feel it, and it's logical the kind of the tension that's been building, you know, especially after that last game where people were kind of celebrating here after game three. They go to Tampa, they win, they're ahead in the series. This not the same old Leafs. What a brilliantly constructed roster, it was written in various places. And then same after game four, it's same old Leafs, don't show up, kind of quit, don't have the royal jelly, don't have the necessities to fight back in the playoffs. It's going to be very, very tense tonight because of all of that.
The opportunity facing the Leafs is massive, and I don't know if it's the same opportunity that they had last season, as you so eloquently laid out. I mean, they should have made at least the semifinals last season. That's just, I think, that's the reality of it. They should have put away the Montreal Canadiens. Now, the opportunity seems tougher this season. Even if you get past Tampa Bay, you're probably going to have Florida. Although Washington is making that series interesting, and even if you get past Florida or Washington, then you might have a team like Carolina or, God forbid, Boston, and then Colorado in the West is looking incredible. But it's just like, I wonder in some ways, if they get past Tampa Bay, the group goes, all right, we know we can do this. Like, we just beat the two-time defending champs. Why shouldn't we be able to beat Florida or Washington? Why shouldn't we be able to beat anyone in this league? In some ways, it's unfair that the Leafs get Tampa Bay, but in other ways, it's a great opportunity to set them off on a playoff run.
Oh yeah, like this, and that's why this is kind of feels like all or nothing, because a lot of people, the optimistic side, people have made the comparison to the Washington Capitals, right, and the Ovechkin team when they finally beat Pittsburgh, when they finally got past Pittsburgh in the playoffs. That's kind of when the dam broke and they went on to win the Stanley Cup after being so close for all those years, but not being able to get, mostly not be able to get past Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh. So that's the one theory, is that if they finally win a series, especially this series, the dam breaks, they are confident, they realize how good they are. And there are some good, you're right, there are some good teams left in the East, but if you look at kind of the way the playoffs have gone so far, nobody looks invulnerable here. Carolina owned Boston during the regular season, but that's turned into a series. Florida's been life and death with Washington. Does anybody there look unbeatable? Like, there's no equivalent to Colorado in the East right now, I don't think. So if you get through this series, why not, right? Why not? Why wouldn't you be able to keep rolling and win the East and maybe get to the Stanley Cup Finals? It's certainly possible. But the flip side is, if you lose this series, and if you lose this series, especially if you appear to kind of wilt, which is what happened. If you think of the Game 7 against Montreal last year, they looked terrified. They looked terrified. And if you know, in this last game, they just didn't really show up against Tampa. If you know, if they do that at home tonight and get rolled in six by Tampa, even if they hang on and get rolled in seven by Tampa, it's not just. The problem is, the question is not just kind of a roster construction. It's going to be kind of about character. Like, it's about the essential makeup of this team. And they've got an enormous amount of money invested in four guys. Well, you know, five guys if you add Morgan Rielly. They've got a goaltender who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, Jack Campbell, who no one's totally sure, is he really a number one or not a number one? Unpicking this thing in a cap, with a flat cap for the foreseeable future, is nearly impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, like I said, all or nothing, right? Either you win this series and everybody takes a deep breath, and you know, even if you lose in the next round, you could at least say, well, we made progress. But if you lose this series, And again, even if you do it on merit to a team that may well be better than you, man, oh man, like I'm not sure how many people are going to get fired, but somebody's going to get fired because, as I say, you can't really unpick the roster. And I like, you'll have it go into another season where in October everybody's saying nothing matters until April, which is what we just went through, right? Mm-hmm. Don't even talk about the regular season. Call me in April. I don't care if you've got a Hart Trophy candidate. I don't care how many points you can get in a regular season. Call me in April when you win something, because that's where we were all this year, and that's where we'll be headed.
I find the group psychology, the team psychology, so interesting in hockey and in all team sports, really. And like individual sports psychology is interesting, you know, when you talk about goalies or golfers getting the yips or baseball players getting the yips. But it's, you talked about, you'll be interested to see if the Leafs wilt or not. That is a collective thing. And it's interesting because sometimes it's like this thing that happens that's unsaid on a team, but everyone knows it's going. Like, and everyone knows it's happening. It's like, oh my God, we're choking. We're choking as a group right now. And I feel like that's what happened against the Montreal Canadiens last season. I guess the big question is, do you have any theories on, like, how do you not wilt at the key moments? Like, what do the good teams have? Yeah, if you had that answer, I'd be a lot richer. You'd win the Jack Adams every year. But, like, it's just, it really is fascinating, like, how a group can either collectively come together or just, like, wilt.
Well, and, you know, it's a sport where try hard matters. Like baseball is funny, right? Because baseball is not a rah-rah game, and when a team goes into a slump in baseball, or they just can't get it together in a best of seven, or it's because you can't kind of rah-rah your way into it. You can't go into the, you know, you're not trying to fight for loose balls, right? You know, you're not trying to. It's not that kind of game. But hockey is that kind of game. Like it is that, and skill, you know, goaltending matters the most in the playoffs. Obviously, elite skill matters in the playoffs, but. You know, even if you watched that, the last game in the Kings Oilers series, and watched the way the Kings played that game, and again, I don't think they're as good as the Oilers, player for player, but they just took that game away. They just said, "We are not going to lose this game." And right from the get go, every loose puck, every time they went into the corner, everything, they fought and fought and fought, and won a hockey game. And you can win a series doing that. You can win a Stanley Cup doing that. I think you still need elite skill, and you definitely need an elite goaltender. But there's a try-hard element. And the most mystifying thing is why that doesn't show up sometimes. Like in Toronto, as you may know, the William Nylander clip, the viral William Nylander clip, has been circulating everywhere from that last game, where William Nylander's an incredibly skilled player who at his best is just dazzling to watch. And there's a clip in that game where the puck goes into the corner in the Tampa end, and he has the option of going in to forecheck and to try and force the play, maybe hit somebody, try and dig the puck out, and he just does a U-ey. He just skates away. And you watch that and say, how can you do that? How can you do that in a playoff game? You can't do that in a playoff game. You're not allowed. This is where guys are supposed to fall down and take a puck in the face if they have to block a shot.
Fight for every inch of the ice.
Yeah. Play with broken legs, right? All of that stuff that's supposed to be hockey. And that's the mysterious part, is why, you know, what is it? And you're right, it's collective. It's not individual. I can single out one guy, but it is a collective thing. Like, what happens? You know, Tampa did a great job shutting down Toronto's first line. That shutdown line they have is unbelievable, right? And just dominated the Matthews-Marner line. And they got last change, so they're going to do that on the road, or they're going to do that in Tampa at home. But what about the other guys? What about everybody else? And how do you create that in a team? And how does a team lose that? Like, honest to God, I wish I, but you know, and I think any fan knows it when they see it. Like, if your team starts to roll over and surrender, you know what it looks like. Choke is the ugliest word in sport. I hate to use it because, like, I don't know what it's like out there. I have no idea. But, man, it's hard not to use it in certain circumstances, and you just kind of see that fear in that eye, their eyes, or that, again, that sense of surrender, the sense of, we're not going to win here, so I'm not going to bother. Man, it's hard to watch.
We're speaking to Stephen Brunt from Fan590 Sportsnet.ca here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You talked about all the other guys in Toronto, and I know, you know, as a host of a daily radio show, you get a good sense of the temperature check in and around the fan base and who's getting angst and who's drawing ire. Heat check on John Tavares. How much scrutiny is he facing right now?
No, it's huge. Yeah. And some of it is, some of it is merited. He hasn't been good in this series. And I never, one of my rules in life is never blame a guy for the contract that somebody gave him of their own free will. Like, never point said and say, wow, look at all the money he's making. He should be better. No, that, you know, he didn't decide to pay himself the money. Someone else did. So that's not his fault. So he should get paid as much money as he can possibly get paid. But I think there's two things with him. You know, one is, yeah, he's especially not looked good in this series. Number two, he's not, you know, compared to Matthews or Marner or Nylander, he's not that kind of player. Like, a lot of what he does is kind of, you know, standing in front of the net and deflecting pucks and playing the kind of the dirty game that way. Like, that's what he does. He's not a dipsy doodle guy. And, you know, he arrived with so much hype and they gave him the C and he was coming home and a huge free agent signing. And it was symbolic of the new Leafs that he chose to come to Toronto, chose to play in Toronto. So there's all this other stuff I'm not sure any of that has anything to do with him particularly. But I can't excuse the way he's played. But if you combine that, you know, where he's not producing, he's kind of a point of game guy during the season. He's not ever been the guy he was statistically with the Islanders since he's come to Toronto. But also, you know, he just, it's that kind of game where you can kind of pick on him. It's easy to pick on him. He's, again, one of the, if they do not win this series, he's 100, he'll be at the top of the list. He will be 100% at the top of the list, but what are you going to do then? You know, he's not going anywhere. He's absolutely not going anywhere.
We're talking to Stephen Brunt. It's on the Halford and Ruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Stephen, turning to another sport, how would you describe the state of the CFL right now?
Wow. I hate to say precarious because I've probably been saying that for 40 years, but this is very interesting that they appear to be on the verge of a labor war after following a year in which they didn't play and then a year in which they had to play at a limited capacity with a limited schedule and presumably lost tons of money. But you know, what's going on is like ownership, that there's been a reality in terms of CFL players that ownership has never fully exploited, which is, you know, but you have to be kind of brutal to fully exploit it, which is there's an endless number of football players being produced in the United States every year. And those who do not play in the NFL don't really have anywhere else to go. Yeah. And I know there's the new USFL and I know there's going to be the new XFL, but let's put that aside for a second. So you've got endless supply. And they'll play cheap. They will play for next to nothing because they'll keep the dream alive. And for many of them, that dream is about going back home to the States to play in the NFL someday. So, you know, if you were going to run the most economically efficient system, you would just cycle those guys through, you know, pay your stars, but don't pay anybody else. And you definitely would not put in a ratio system based on nationality when you have a limited supply of Canadian talent. And you're creating an artificial economy for those guys. You're creating value that you don't need to create because most of them are not stars. They fill out ratio positions, and because there are fewer of them, their value goes up, especially veteran guys who can play. So, you know, if the kind of brutalist version of the CFL would be no ratio, push the cap down as low as you can push it down, only pay a few quarterbacks, and then just take advantage of this supply system, which you don't have to pay for because it's the university system in the States. But they've never done that, right? They've never gone the full Monty here and said, "That's it. We're gonna go right down, and we're gonna treat players like cattle." But they seem to be getting closer to it right now. And you know, this idea of trying to get the players to sign a 10-year collective agreement, which, you know, again, I assume there'll be a bait and switch at the end, and it'll be 5 years or something. And try and make the players grateful for only signing for 5 years. You know, with a flat cap number, getting rid of the ratio in some form. And you know, really kind of daring players to come north for training camp, knowing that they could be on strike the day after training camp starts and be high and dry. Like, I know the league has now promised to at least feed them if they're on strike, but like, that's what we're talking about here. This is really kind of law of the jungle stuff. And I don't know if they're willing to follow through or how far they're willing to go, but the fact that this is the posture and it's, you know, we're a little over a week away from training camp starting, is a tad ominous, I would say.
I started watching the CFL in the 80s when the Lions were arguably a more popular team in Vancouver than the Vancouver Canucks. And you could list off the stars, Matt Dunnigan, Damon Allen, you know, Tracy Hamm later, and then, of course, Doug Flutie later, playing in three markets and being a real star player. Like, these guys were star athletes. Right now, I could not tell you. Like, I think, was it Zach Collaros won the MOP this year? But, like, I do not consider him a star athlete in Canada. Like, I just don't. Maybe that's my Vancouver bias showing. But they need star power, and they don't have it. Agree or disagree with it? I mean, maybe if you're in Saskatchewan or you're in Winnipeg, like, you're like, what is this guy from Vancouver talking about? Like, Zach Collaros is a big deal. But I don't know. I'm not compared to the star power that guys like I just listed had in the 80s.
Can confirm Zach Collaros is the reigning MOP.
Okay, see? I got that right. That's good.
That's very good. I'm not sure I would have got that off the top of my head. Look, I live in Hamilton. And Hamilton, you know, it's alive here. And it's a smaller city. And it's kind of the not the only game in town, but certainly the biggest game in town. And there's, you know, a bit of a kind of a cultural, historical thing here. So people do turn out. And they got a new stadium. And it's doing fine here. But, you know, when I go to work in Toronto later today, it does not exist. Like, it does, the Toronto Argonauts do not exist.
It's getting that way in Vancouver. It's getting to the point where it doesn't exist. And I see, like, the Lions on social media. And I know Twitter isn't everything. I realize that. But they'll have things like, here's our first draft pick. You know, like, it's a fairly big deal. And it'll get, like, 4 retweets. You know, like, there's, like, no engagement going on online right now.
No, and that's like, and I always have to kind of qualify this, especially when I'm talking to people in, you know, in the prairies who assume that anybody from Ontario is like anti CFL, right? You hate the CFL. You're a Toronto guy. You hate the CFL. I'm a Hamilton guy. I love the CFL. I grew up with the CFL. I would like it to thrive, but I just can't lie. And I don't know if I knew what the fix was. Again, it's another one of those ones. They've tried everything in Toronto. And it's, you know, it's the biggest market in the country. And I know people say, well, we don't need Toronto. Well, you kind of do. And, you know, right now it is, you know, it's definitely behind the soccer team, right? So, you know, Jays, Leafs, Raptors, Toronto FC, and then somewhere below that in the conversation are the Toronto Argonauts. And they're not going to get out of that hole. You know, in Montreal, that it's eroded tremendously from what it was when they moved into the stadium at McGill and everybody thought it was cute. And even in, you know, even in Calgary, you think of that as a great CFL town. It's not nearly what it was. So, you know, Saskatchewan's is the anomaly. Like, Saskatchewan's different than everywhere else in Canada. Winnipeg to a degree. But I think that's it. And I don't, you know, will you ever have another, you know, somebody who is as much of a household name as Flutie was, or even Matt Dunnigan was, or let alone a Warren Moon? Like, those guys aren't coming here anymore. They're just not. And, you know, you can't really, so you can't spend your way out of this, I don't think, in terms of talent. Well, you know, what they need to create is sort of what MLS has created, or actually more like what the Canadian Premier League has created, where you say that, well, look, we know this isn't the best soccer in the world, but it's our local.
Yep.
And it's fun. So let's go and have fun and support the local. It doesn't have to be the NFL. It's our own thing.
Yeah.
But, man, you know, people, I tell you here, that is people just turn their noses up at it.
I honestly think they need to turn it more into minor league baseball in the big cities.
Yeah.
And have those games where you're just like, wow, it's like one kind of cute promotion after the other. Steven, I don't know how much you've been out to Vancouver or seen a Vancouver Canadiens game at Nat Bailey Stadium, but I think the Seas are frankly the best run organization, sports organization in Vancouver. Now, they have the advantage in that nobody cares if they win or lose, as long as the experience is good. I don't think you're going to get to that point with the CFL, but I do think in some ways, and that's why I push back so much on their global ambitions. I'm like, it's not going to happen, guys. It's not going to happen. So maybe dial it back a little bit and focus locally and think more minor league, because I'm sorry, that's what you are now.
Yeah, I know it's a tricky position for them, because they've always wanted to say, look, we're not a minor league, where we play a different game than anybody else in the world plays. We're the best three down league in the world, which, you know, is true. And I know they don't want to kind of undercut their own product that way. But, so they're in a tricky spot, right? Because you're right. Like, the minor league experience in all sports is different. And, you know, it's minor league baseball, the guys come and go, right? You don't. It's yeah. Some years you'll have a good draw, a good hand, and you might win a championship. But other years you might get a bunch of players who are not that good, or lose your best player in the middle of the season. But that's the way it is. But you're going for yeah. You're right. It's experience and community and all that other stuff. So could you get to that point? And you know, but they've got kind of, you know, they've got a foot in the kind of the big league camp still. And again, in places like, you know, well, one place like Regina, where you know, if that team was a private enterprise rather than a community enterprise, that team would be worth several hundred million dollars because of the amount of money they run through it. So it's you know, whereas this say the team in the biggest market in the country is barely breathing. Like how do you fix that? All the teams are different, community owned teams versus privately owned teams. Like you'd almost have to blow it up and start all over again. And I think, you know, certainly that when they shut down for that one pandemic year, there were people who said, you know, maybe, you know, maybe going away, maybe, you know, maybe you should just, this thing should go away completely and then restart and remodel the business. But not, you know, that would have been pretty traumatic too.
Steven, thank you very much for doing this today. Great stuff. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight and all the Stanley Cup playoff action this week. Let's do this again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Good talking to you guys.
You too. Thanks. That's Steven Brunt from Fan590 and Sportsnet.ca here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We got to get going to break. Do you have something you'd like to say?
Just the typical CFL text that we get in. Here's one unsigned. We get it. You two hate the CFL. Stop talking about it. You two are part of the problem. You bash the CFL and praise the Seahawks, even though 60% of this city aren't 12s. Enough already. I'm not going to speak for Halford because I know that Halford's not the biggest CFL fan, and he never really has been. He's part of that lost generation.
I am part of the problem.
He is part of the problem. I love the CFL. I remember going to Lions games growing up. I've traveled across the country to see the Grey Cup. I think the CFL is facing a leadership crisis right now. I have no faith in Randy Ambrosi. There is a lot of talk, never any decisive, there's never decisions made. And I disagree with their strategy. I don't hate the CFL. I want it to come back stronger. But they keep screwing up. And it angers me. And it frustrates me. Because we're such a one-horse sports town in Vancouver that we will get more feedback on the Canucks' fourth line in the offseason than we will talking about the BC Lions during their regular season or talking about the big issues with them. It's not the media's fault. The media, in a lot of ways, follows what the fans are interested in. Go to any sports bar on a Sunday during the NFL season. Look at all the NFL fans watching the games on a regular basis. Go to a sports bar when there's a big CFL game on. Do you think people are like, hey, can you turn the volume up? This is a big game. Never happens. I'm sorry if you're a CFL diehard fan and you don't like the way things are going for the CFL, but I don't like it either. But it's not my fault. It's not Halford's fault. I don't know whose fault it is. But it starts with the leadership of the CFL, and right now it's not good enough. In the league, for the first time in my life, I've always been like, yeah, the CFL will muddle through. They'll find a way. Canadians love the CFL at the end of the day. They love the Grey Cup. People still watch the Grey Cup. For the first time in my life, I'm worried about the CFL actually surviving. You can text in and blame me for saying that. I don't care. That's my opinion on it. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Thomas Drantz will discuss the one horse in this sports market, the Vancouver Canucks, coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show.